Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, February the 4th, and we are continuing our hearings on Senate Bill 5529, the State Library. And before I open the public hearing on the bill, let me just talk about a couple of general things that resulted from us walking out of here with our eyeballs rolled back in our heads yesterday concerning the process. And I had conversations with part of the budget leadership and also with Mr. Rocco. And what appears to be going on is that we are going to be seeing either at the end of this week or sometime towards the beginning of next week a more detailed list coming out that is going to be a kind of a, it's going to be the 30% cut list that the agencies were directed to put together as the result of the former governor's budget directions to build the 03-05 budgets. And so we're going to get to take a look at what hasn't been taken so far in the different rebalances that we've had to do because of the failure of the ballot measure and because of the downturn in the November revenue forecast. So that information should be coming, and that should give us some additional things to look at in terms of cuts. But the other comment that I was given was quite succinctly that we should cool our jets a little bit. And that we need to give the process time to work, and that what we're here doing right now is gathering information, and that we shouldn't expect that we'll have clarity and clear direction on where to go at this point in the process, and that as the information develops and as the analysts analyze the information and as we go from the public hearing process into the work session process, that we should trust that this will suddenly, or I guess slowly, become more clear to us. So with that, I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5529, and we have got a bunch of information here as a result of the discussions that we had yesterday. So, Cindy, if you would kind of take us through what we're looking at, and then we'll get into the meat of it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, attached in the packet in front of you, I brought a copy of the State of Oregon price list for 2003-05 that was from the budget instruction book that we received. There's a copy of the 1997 Secretary of State's audit. I think it was done in 96, but it's actually dated 1997. A copy of the prioritized list of all services from the library, and a corrected copy of the additions and subtractions list for the library, which was included in my analysis. Also, at the very back, there is a from BAM, there is a copy of the information that we needed on health services and PERS. Linda Ames brought that in.
Can you take us, what I've kind of done is divide up these pieces of information amongst who brought them here. And I had you bringing in the 03-05 price list. So can you step us through what that is?
Well, these are the charges that are made for the 2003-05 biennium, charges by which agency number, chargebacks. As you can see, it goes by agency number.
So where's the library on this?
I think it's further back.
What page are we on? Just let me know.
Okay.
It's this one. I mean, this is the pack.
E9.
Library's on E33. Right. And they're divided up. They're numbered different.
Okay.
There we go. There's an FTE charge, usage charge, and total charge.
So this is how they compute the charge to all the other agencies that comes in as part of their other funds.
That's correct.
Madam Chair,
Senator Masley.
Unless my memory is inaccurate, which it is from time to time, I thought yesterday we heard that ODOT was one of the major contributors to this, and I don't see them on the list.
That's right. Well, and there's more state agencies than this. I mean, they're not, they can't be the only ones that aren't on the list. Please come forward.
This doesn't add up to $5 million.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm Linda Ames with Budget and Management. And the price list just for the library assessment should be four pages.
Yeah. Okay, and so we only have
I'm only seeing the last page.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And we have a very nice blank page.
Okay.
Because that doesn't add up to $5 million, does it?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And what I gave you yesterday was the whole thing, but it was double-sided, and I wonder if it I did look at it this morning, and ODOT was actually the biggest, and the other big ones were DCBS, Department of Revenue, Department of Education, and Judicial. Those were like the five over 100,000 just on the usage piece.
So there's the...
I don't know. I'm a little... I'm trying to see if there's another place where it's
probably
in
32,
there.
31, and 30.
Yeah. Right.
I would blame it on the copier.
Well, that's a good place to start. Well, I would blame it too.
Rather than figuring out who to blame it on, how do we get the whole piece of information here? Who's got it? Do you have the whole thing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is double-sided, so maybe I need to get another copy from you, Linda. I could, because
I didn't bring a new copy. Do you happen to have it?
So have you got all the information?
I have a very rough draft of the original calculations. Where you can... This would work. This rough draft would get us the numbers.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know the bottom line is
we have it. We have
okay.
It. We just don't have it. Copied.
Sorry.
It just didn't cost.
No.
It would be possible to have somebody very quickly make a piece of this for the committee members. I don't know if Gina's listening or somebody could come in and rescue us here. So it's all of table two. We need a copy of this and this and this and this.
Here's somebody.
You been rescued?
I got some extra copies, yeah. Here's the 15 copies of the library.
Hey, this is staff service.
It's pretty interesting about this thing. You have it? Departments. That's interesting in the assessment piece.
I was just asking if they had it in the audience. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I feel warm.
Where's my coffee? Thank you. And I think you probably need one too. And
poor Linda.
This looks more like all of the departments that we have.
Okay, who's the big ones here?
Well, it's kind of interesting, you know.
State police.
Three pages.
Corrections. Oh, God. Now,
it's more interesting how big these departments are than the assessment, you know.
No kidding. I wonder what the
corrections is for education are.
Why do some of them not have usage charges and some of them not have FTE charges?
You know,
could our business...
Please come forward. If you haven't, this is kind of informal, so if you have information, just approach the table there. And all we ask is that you sign in for the record.
My name is Keith Adams. I'm the business manager, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Some of the agencies had such low usage that they didn't even appear on here. Some of them may have never requested any information at all. The FTE, there are some agencies that we don't charge. For instance, the university system is on here but doesn't get charged at all. That's in the statute.
And I'm assuming that when you get down into the Board of Architect Examiners and the State Board of Geologists Examiners, that the FTE are so low that it doesn't compute to anything?
Some of those don't show up on the state's listing as having any FTE. And I'm not sure if that's actually true or if it's because they're not really... They're semi-independent?
Madam Chair, I believe there was some confusion. We have a few semi-independent, you know, basically independent little boards, and they weren't included in here. It isn't clear to me if they should have been or if it was inconsistent. He uses a certain list that comes from DAS, and it may have been that those couple of FTE in those agencies should have actually showed up in here.
Do you have the
learning facilities? No, I marked that one too. I don't know what it is.
What was that?
Learning facilities.
Number.
Yeah. They obviously have a lot of hits on it, but no FTE charge. That's what I marked.
Yeah. What we're looking at is about halfway down the first page, and the agency number is 17200, and it's the Oregon Facilities Authority. They have no FTE charge, but a fairly hefty usage charge. Can you talk to us about what that one is?
I'm not sure what the FTE is on that. It didn't show up on the list. However, some of those small boards with very few people are the ones most in need of information from us, so we do get quite a few hits off of some of those small agencies.
Madam Chair, I've never actually heard of that agency, so I'm not even sure what it is. It isn't an agency that comes before you with a budget.
No, I've never heard of it.
No, I haven't either. I can find out what they are.
Okay, well, and if anybody in LFO is listening that has any knowledge about what the Oregon Facilities Authority is, we would appreciate getting someone over here.
Give them 1 minute and they'll be through that door.
The complete board.
It's the phantom agency. Committee members, do you have questions or comments on this list at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Just a comment. Looking at the audit materials that were provided to us from the 1995-96 audit, there is a statement with regard to how the Oregon State Library documents the agency assessments. That information may be helpful. I'm looking at the first page of the letter to John Latimer. It's dated October 14th, 1997. It's
Here we go. Okay.
And in the fourth paragraph down, it says documentation for state agency assessments. The internal systems for tracking agencies' usage of the library are being reviewed for accuracy and effectiveness to ensure that a fair assessment is levied each agency. The methodology of the service components tracked will be reviewed and documented. Our accountant will review the assessment calculations for accuracy.
What may be interesting to the committee is if you would track down what was done on that. Linda, do you have any information about whether the audit, the Secretary of State proceeded with that audit point at all, or do you have any information?
I don't believe they've ever followed up on it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I know one of the issues they've had is in order to track usage, there's some technology issues because you have to be able to measure how many hits you've had on databases and those kind of electronic information sources that you have, and that the technology is in development to do a better job of thoroughly capturing all those hits.
So this
and that it's improving, but it still is not perfect because there are still, depending on how your servers interface with the system, it can be difficult to identify that it's a state agency, is my understanding, and it's improving year by year, but there are still some technical issues. Would that be a fair assessment?
I believe that's fair.
Follow-up? Just some additional information for the committee as we're trying to track this discussion. I think the other pertinent paragraph to our discussion is contained in the document that's titled Summary, Oregon State Library. I think this is the summary of the state audit. And in that fourth paragraph...
Senator, what page are you on?
This one.
Oh, the summary, got it.
You want it to.
In that fourth paragraph, it says that the review revealed that internal controls for processing cash receipts and authorizing certain expenditures could be improved. Documentation needs to be improved for determining assessment amounts and reporting federal expenditures. Programs funded by the assessment to state agencies need to establish a working capital fund. Library also needs to comply with fixed asset inventory procedures required by the Oregon Accounting Manual. And we also found that some of the recommendations from the previous audit had not been completely or properly implemented. And I guess my interest in pointing this out, Madam Chair, is just to ensure that there is some continuity of tracking areas that were identified for improvement and determining that there was improvement and that what we're looking at today is a statement of what changes or improvements have been made.
Well, and it appears that what we've got here is a summary of the issues that were raised by the audit,
yes,
and then a letter from Mr. Shepke answering the audit points.
Right. That's, Madam Chair, the standard procedure is when there is an audit conducted, the department responds in a writing response. But then they're supposed to follow up on that.
Right. And I guess one of my concerns is that I know that we're asking agencies if there's been an audit in the last 2 years, but that's a short window. And, again, this is an audit that occurred in 96, 97, but it contains pertinent information.
Right.
And so we may be asking, we may be framing the wrong question.
Oh.
Copy of the most recent audit would be the,
yes,
the proper question.
Yes.
When is the most
thank you.
Well, it will vary by department.
Okay.
Madam
Chair. Any more questions on what we should do is probably work through the documents that we have kind of as an overview so that we know what we've got to work with and then get into a detailed discussion about what they contain. So... I appear to have lost my cover sheet. Wow. We've got a copy of the state audit, a copy of the answer back, a copy of the prioritized list for all the services of the library, and you brought that one in, so can you take us through that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Shepke, Director of the State Library. You have before you today an improved version of our priority list, and I do apologize that we weren't able to deliver a quality product to you yesterday, but we think this is much improved.
Okay.
It has the same seven...
Well, let me interject, Mr. Shepke, that I think our instructions were somewhat confusing, so I really appreciate you doing this in such short such a short time frame.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The document, which now covers two pages, has the same seven priorities in the same order as you saw yesterday. The way that we chose to approach this was to take our statutory responsibilities, which are very clear, very comprehensive in describing our entire program, and prioritize those. But what we've added to this today are those bullet points under each one that show the specific services that are associated with that statutory language. And then we have added the dollars to that, an estimate of the dollars and the FTE. The document does total. We added administrative services as a separate line. We didn't attempt to distribute administrative costs over all these programs. So that's how we dealt with that. And then it does total to the governor's recommended budget and FTE.
Okay, then attached to that, you have also got your 10% reduction list. Can you explain that to the members of the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is something that is in the requirements for our budget submission to the Department of Administrative Services. So this list was actually approved by the State Library Board last year and was submitted to the governor and has ended up in Governor Kulongoski's recommended budget. And I just pulled it out. It's in this big book that you have, but I pulled it out so that you could deal with it easier. And it does include 10% reductions in all funds, in general funds, federal funds, and other funds. It describes the reduction and the impact of the reduction, and it also gives some information about other alternatives that were considered by the board. And so this should be a very useful document.
The 10% reductions that are proposed in this document, are they in the governor's recommended budget already?
The answer to that is that there is one piece of one of the reductions, I would say, that's in the governor's recommended budget. The board approved their proposal for a 10% general fund reduction is to reduce the ready-to-read grant program.
Okay.
And in the governor's recommended budget, that program is reduced by 15%.
Questions, comments? Senator Meserle, you look like you're getting ready to say something here.
Well, Madam Chairman, thank you. I'm a little concerned that we're really not interested in reducing other funds or federal funds programs. I don't think we're really focusing on the general funds. And
the only program here is Ready to Read. And when you look at the prioritized list of all services, and you kind of work your way up from the bottom, you don't run into general fund until you get to the fourth goal.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the fourth goal and the third goal and the first goal, mm-hmm, that have general fund in them. Senator Wardley.
Yes, and I, that leads me to ask the question, pardon me, why number four isn't number one?
Yeah.
And I ask that question because of the linkage to number four to the key organ benchmarks that I referenced on yesterday. Benchmark number 18, the percent of Oregon children entering school ready to learn. And 19 and 20, the percent of third and eighth graders who achieve established skill levels in reading.
Mr.
I can respond to that, Madam Chair. if you'll, in your big book here is what Senator Gordley is referring to, and I'm trying to flip to it here. On page 80 of this big book, I don't know if you want to turn to that, is our performance measures with the links to Oregon benchmarks. And in that document, we were asked to identify the Oregon benchmarks that the library has an effect on.
Where would that be?
And if you look at the top of this page, you'll see there's three of them.
Got it.
And two of them are the benchmarks that Senator Gordley just mentioned. The third one at the top is actually Oregon benchmark number 38, which relates specifically to public library service. And that one is one that is entirely the state library's benchmark. And we affect that in a very important way. We go out and work with local communities to improve their library service, establish library service. The other two we have an impact on with the Ready to Read grant program, but we're not the only agency that affects those benchmarks. Obviously, the Oregon Department of Education and our K-12 school system has a large role in that, larger than libraries do. So the reason that number one is number one is because it does relate directly to Oregon benchmark number 38, which is our benchmark.
And would you also say the same thing about priority numbers two and three?
Priority two doesn't relate to a benchmark. And priority three is our Talking Book and Braille Services program, which does not have a benchmark. And I think, if I may, Madam Chair, I'd like to explain why the board, why the board's position is that if we need to reduce our general fund budget, that we would need to do that in the Ready to Read grant program and not in the Talking Book and Braille Services program. Those are our two general fund programs. And aside from the Ready to Read grant program and the Talking Book and Braille Services program, there's not hardly any general fund in our budget anymore. And so the choice that the board has is to look at those two programs and say which one of these should be reduced. And there's a serious problem with trying to reduce the Talking Book and Braille Services program, and that is that the federal contribution is very significant. They provide, as I showed you yesterday, all the books, all the Talking Book players, and all the postage to mail the books to people for free. And our agreement with the federal government is that we must serve everyone who is eligible for that service. And there's really no way to reduce that program in a meaningful way short of sort of reducing the caseload and serving fewer Oregonians.
Representative Smith.
Yes. Is State Library the only agency who serves the blind in this capacity?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that is true.
And, well, just a comment for the committee. With that in mind, that would not be an area that I would want to go to, if at all possible. Because although our ready to read, because I'm a librarian with kids, it is something near and dear to my heart. I know kids can get reading elsewhere, but I don't know that the blind can get these materials elsewhere. I mean, that's how I would look at it.
With the ready to read program, how are you moving, or what success have you had in getting other entities besides the state government to come forward and help fund the program? Can you talk to us about any efforts that have been made in that area?
Yes, Madam Chair. What happens with the Ready to Read grant program is, I think one of the people that testified for the Oregon Library Association yesterday mentioned, is that it really leverages local support from city libraries, county libraries, and district libraries that get the program. And we ask the question every year, what did you contribute to the Ready to Read project that you undertook? And it's very significant. Sometimes the local money exceeds the state money. So that's where that leveraging happens in that program.
Can you talk to us also about if this is the area where the choice is made to do the economies in your budget, what role does the state library play in the program? What's going to be missing if the funding isn't available?
I think the problem that occurs when you start reducing the Ready to Read grant program is that for some small libraries, the grants become very, very small. The average size grant right now is only $6,600. The smallest grant we gave this last year was $69. And I think it might have been in a library in Senator Meserle's district. So when you start reducing off the dollar per child that we started at in this biennium, the grants become so small that, and because the grants have, by statute, have to go to every library, you really start losing effectiveness because the grants become fairly insignificant.
So is there, in terms of what the state library system does, any kind of a component beside the grant? Is there an oversight or a management aspect to what you do for this program?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. We have a youth services librarian specialist who goes out and works with all the libraries on their youth services programs, shares the best things that all the libraries are doing, and that's why we've seen an 80% increase in service to children in the last 10 years. It's the combination of this, you know, relatively small amount of state money leveraged by a lot of local money with assistance from the state library to help people get the most out of the money.
You have one FTE in this $1.2 million, and the FTE is like around $120,000 or something?
It's actually one FTE that's not in the $120,000. It's budgeted separately. It's not budgeted in the grant itself.
Mm. The general fund that's in the budget for Ready to Read is all involved in the grant part of it?
It's all special payments, Madam Chair.
Okay, and what is the federal funds the same? Is that all involved in the grant part of it?
The federal funds is separate, Madam Chair.
Can you explain to us how the federal funds work and where they come from and what they go to?
Madam Chair, I actually have some slides about that. I didn't finish my presentation yesterday.
Okay.
I have 27 slides left. If you'd like to see them, I'd be happy to show them to you. I think they'd answer a lot of the questions.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that we derailed you before you'd finished your presentation.
Would it be okay to are you interested in in an entire overview of all our programs at this point, or do you just want to go to ready to read? Or
I would think that we would benefit from an overview presentation, so please take us through.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're back again to the three programs of the state library: serving state government, the Library for the Blind, and helping local libraries. This is our service to state government. You saw this yesterday. Our primary strategy for serving state government is through the internet, to their desktop. You do not have to come to the state library if you're a state employee. You don't even have to call us on the phone necessarily. You can go to the web on your own computer and get an incredible wealth of information. This system is called SmartOrGov, and it's one of the best systems of its kind in the whole country. And as you can see from looking at it, it has premium databases. We license 57 databases for state government, everything from the full text to the Oregonian to very specialized databases in environmental science and biology and medicine and things that the agencies really need. If we didn't do that, the agencies would license those on their own, and it would cost the state a lot more money. We license for the whole state, and we save money by doing that.
So this is available to people that work for the state of Oregon, not the general population?
Absolutely. You have to have a password, and you have to work for the state of Oregon. So we give everybody a registration, Madam Chair. We also, if you see the best of the web, that's information on the internet that we have tested, we've vetted, we know it's accurate, so that the state employees aren't just surfing the net or using Google or something like that. They can come to this site and they know they're getting quality information that's been selected by our librarians. We do have a strategic plan for this unit. What the board wants to do in the next biennium is increase marketing and training. We want to lead an interagency development of electronic state document preservation and access. We're worried that as agencies publish more information on the web and not in paper, that we still have to preserve that information. We can't just have it be wiped out when they refresh their website. So we're working on that issue. And we also want to increase this development of electronic information service delivery. And another strategy is to evaluate and improve the FindOr government information locator system, which relates to one of the option packages in the governor's budget, and I'll talk about that in a minute. We have performance measures. The board wants to increase our research assistance. We still answer questions the old-fashioned way. We still answer questions on the phone, by email, people coming to the library. We do about 46 of those a day on average.
Senator
Mesley.
Your second bullet point, am I reading that right? Why would it go down in 2000? Why would your target be less?
Madam Chair, when the board adopted this target in December, we hadn't yet done our latest customer service survey. We did that in January, and it actually came out above the target, so I think the board is going to have to reconsider. We just did a survey where 88% of our customers said we do a very good or excellent job. We want to increase the percentage of state employees that are registered to use this internet information system, and we want to double the number of daily visits. Right now we get about 200 visits to that site a day. We want to double that, and we want to double the visits to the FindOr system, which I'm going to show you in a minute.
Do you have any information why such a low percentage of state employees access this program?
Madam Chair, we're talking about all state employees, and there's some state employees that are very heavy consumers of information, and then that begins to tail off. And so, you know, when you think about some people that have a manual labor job, it's unlikely that they're going to register for this. So we don't foresee the day when 100% of employees are using our system, but we think 14% is pretty good, and we'd like to increase that. So we're marketing. We're going out agencies. We set up displays in the lobbies of state agencies, and when we show people this system, it really increases our use. So we're building on that. The information has a great value for the agency, even if not all employees are using it. If one employee can find some information that really is important to the work of the agency, then we consider that we're serving that entire agency. Here you can see the program costs. This was one of the required elements in our presentation over the last 10 years, and we were asked to show a comparison to inflation, so we do that in this slide. There's the consumer price index and the employment cost index are two different ways to calculate inflation, and so you can see that through 2002, this program is tracking just slightly ahead of inflation in its costs. And I did use the end of fifth special session amount for that. That's why it says 2103 legislatively approved budget adjusted is the fifth special session.
Sure.
Senator Masner.
Thank you. Wouldn't that difference in the rate of increase be due to the more usage, though, simply as opposed to the actual cost of maintaining your...
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, we haven't seen any increase in staffing over this period of time, so I would attribute the inflation just to the inflation that we've seen in our staff costs, health insurance, and PERS, and mm-hmm. those kinds of issues that you're dealing with. Program reductions and enhancements.
Let me try asking a question here, and I'm not quite sure how to get my hands around this. But here we have a program that is, if the recommended budget is to be what's finally embraced, will cost just under $5 million for the biennium, that is used by 14% of state employees. How... Is there a way that we could figure out whether this $5 million, considering the low number or the low percentage of people that are actually accessing the service, how can we figure out whether it's worthwhile to spend this much money on that or not?
Madam Chair, the 14% figure only applies to the electronic SmartOrGov information system. There's other ways that we serve state employees. We answer 46 requests for research every day, and that's not reflected in the 14% figure. We also post 240 mailing lists for state employees with 33,000 subscribers. These are electronic listservs where, you know, DHS wants to network with some groups that they work with, or we host ExecNet, which is the Department of Administrative Services mailing list that goes out to all the agency directors. So that's just another service that we do. We have a whole suite of services that we do for the state employees.
The people that call you up for information, what are some of the reasons why they don't go to the website and get the information?
Sometimes they've been to the website and they haven't found what they were looking for, and we invite them on that site to contact us. Sometimes they just have a very difficult question that they know is going to take, you know, maybe 2 days worth of research by our staff. And so the questions that actually come over the phone nowadays are a lot harder than they used to be.
Thank you.
So we do, we have no program reductions in the governor's budget. There is one program enhancement, and that is to add a librarian position to this, to this team to provide the search engine for Oregon.gov, and I'll show you what that's all about. What you see on this slide, I don't know if you've been to Oregon.gov, but if you go there, you'll see that little button that says Search Oregon State Websites. And you can, it's like Google, you can type into the little box and hit that button. And in this example, I've given you one that is kind of interesting. If you go to Oregon.gov, there's a whole list of agencies, but you won't find the Quality Education Commission because it's sort of buried in the Department of Education. And so you just won't find it if you go to that agency list. But in this example, you can type it in the box, hit search Oregon State websites, and it brings up this other screen, which is FindOr. And as you can see at the bottom, it was successful in finding that, and you can click on that and go right to it. So it really works. And I even made it hard because I didn't put the name right. I put Quality Ed Committee, mm-hmm. and it still found it. So it works really well. What's behind that button is some very sophisticated software that the Department of Administrative Services is licensing, and a lot of work to index the agency websites. And so what this librarian on our staff does is goes out and trains the agencies to index their website. We don't do it. We'd have to have 5 or 6 people if we did it ourselves. But we train the agencies to index their websites properly so that this works. And we began doing this a couple of years ago with a federal grant that actually came to the Washington State Library, and they invited us to be a partner, and we worked together on this and developed this technology. So that's what that decision package is about.
So now the grant's run out and you're looking for another source of funding to continue.
And we just need the staff. We've had to pull away people from very important work to work on this because we realize it's very important. The e-government task force came to us and asked us to do this, and we now have an interagency agreement with the Department of Administrative Services that states that we're assigned this responsibility.
Representative March.
Thanks. Could I just want to clarify some of the uses that might be for this? So if, say, somebody's a contractor in Jefferson County, they could go to this site, figure out which board regulates them, and then maybe find the Oregon administrative rules and such on a particular issue.
Right. They could type in the name of the agency. But if they didn't know the name, they could just type a subject that they thought, you know, matched what they were looking for. It works in many, many different ways. It's very sophisticated and very effective. And when it doesn't work, we fix it. And that happens to me. I'll use it, and it won't get me to the right place, and I'll call my staff and I'll say something's wrong here. They need to find it and make sure that website is indexed properly so that this works. So it's just going to get better and better over time. And I think most people are going to use it to navigate Oregon.gov. They're not going to look through all the lists of agencies and things like that. That's very difficult to do.
Thanks.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Now on to Talking Book and Braille Services. You saw this slide yesterday with the budget and staffing and the job of this unit. And this is a mail order service to people in Oregon all across the state who have lost their sight. The average patron of this service is in their 70s, and they've lost their sight due to macular degeneration or some other condition that happens to people in old age. Most of these people have been readers all their life, and they're just devastated by not being able to read. So this service is what comes into play. And if they have that condition, they have to have a doctor certify their eligibility, and so they apply for this service and they begin the service. As it says here, we mail out an average of almost 1,400 books a day to people, and we get back that many every day. So it's a huge workload at the state library, and we give good service to our customers. We do a 24-hour turnaround time on all requests because it's very important that people get their books in a timely way. And then here you see the Library of Congress contribution, which is very significant. Our entire collection, nearly, comes from the Library of Congress. It's valued at $1.6 million. Our talking book players cost $246 each because they're very specialized. They don't play standard cassettes. They play at a different speed. And the reason is that that way the Library of Congress doesn't have to pay royalties to the publisher. There's a part of the copyright law that says if they record the books at an oddball speed, that they don't have to pay royalties. So it reduces the cost of the program for them. But it means the players are very expensive, so we're lucky that we don't have to pay for the players.
How do people that use this service figure out what's in the collection, and how do they order it? How does that part work?
Madam Chair, we have a very sophisticated computer system that actually profiles people's reading interests, and it automatically selects their books. Now, there's some people that know exactly what they want to read, and you can get to our collection. We do have catalogs in Braille and on the Internet. But for most people who just want, you know, good books to read, they tell us that they want, you know, Westerns and romances and nonfiction, and they don't want dirty words. And they can do that. And our computer puts all that information together, and when they send us, we average about 7 books at a time for people. So when they send 7 back, we check them in, and the computer automatically selects 7 more that they haven't read. It actually keeps track of what they've read, so they don't get the same thing twice.
Amazing.
So it's a really neat system.
And now you have some issues around housing the collection and space. Can you talk to the committee about that? Am I taking you out of?
No, ma'am. Madam Chair, the governor's recommended budget is supporting a budget increase to pay for all the rent that our collection needs to pay to house this collection at the library. And, you know, because of all the pressures on the general fund that, you know, as you know, go back at least 10 years, we've not been given the money in the past to pay the rent. And this collection, though we try to manage it, and as Linda said yesterday, we have actually pared it down to the essentials. We still are getting new books all the time, and we need to get new books. Those are the most popular ones. And we actually, the Library of Congress asks that we keep at least one copy of all the books that have been recorded. So we're not able to just reduce the collection, you know, down. If we reduced it too small, we wouldn't have the books that our customers wanted, and the Library of Congress wouldn't be happy if we didn't have at least one copy of everything. So the governor's budget actually funds the rent for the collection for this program, which in the past we've had no other choice but to subsidize this rent from other funds from the state agency assessment. And in every session, we've come to the Ways and Means Committee and told them that we're having to do that and that we think it's not appropriate. And we're glad that the governor, in his budget, is addressing that issue, because we don't want to have to spend assessment dollars on this program. It's totally inappropriate. And if we get another audit from the Secretary of State, I'm sure that would be an issue, because it's obviously not right.
Please proceed.
What the board wants to do in 0305 is we do need a new automation system, and we're going to get one. We're not going to pay for it with state dollars. We're going to find the money to do that through donations and other grants and things. We're going to continue our fund development activity, which is very important. We are raising money for this program from our users. We solicit our users twice a year. And we just have the most successful fall campaign we've ever had. And we're building a TBABS and Talking Book and Braille Services Endowment Fund. It was authorized in the last session. It's up to $400,000. someday we're going to use the interest on that endowment to minimize our need for general funds for this program. So even though the board is not proposing to reduce general funds in the near term, in the long term, we definitely want to do that. We realize that we can't be totally reliant on the general fund for this program, and that's why they're building this endowment fund. This is our circulation in the past 10 years, and it, as you can see, it rose fairly steadily. But in the last 2 years, we've had a little dip in circulation, and the board is concerned about that. And we think one of the problems is that we don't market this program very well at all. It's kind of word of mouth that people even hear about it, and that we'd like, you know, within our very limited budget, to be able to get the word out so that more people know that this service is available. We know the number of Oregonians who are losing their sight late in life is increasing, so we know there's more people out there that need this service.
I was going to ask you how people find out about the program and then get into the loop of receiving the materials.
We work with doctors. We work with librarians around the state. We have brochures and handouts. And that's usually how people find out about it. We get people moving here from other states that have had the service in other states that just know about it. But we don't do as good a job of that as we should. And part of that is our budget constraints are such that if we really marketed this effectively, we probably couldn't deal with the outcome of that. We'd probably get more business than we could handle. So we've been a little gun shy about that too.
I know that libraries are now in the business of checking, allowing people to borrow books on tape. Have other alternate places that people can go and the evolving technology cut into the circulation?
That could be, Madam Chair. Public libraries, our public libraries are building very good audiobook collections, and I'm sure that some blind people are turning to public libraries, but the selection still doesn't match the selection that we have, and the convenience is not the same because they have to go to a public library, and a lot of these people have real transportation mobility problems. The advantage of this service is that it gets mailed directly to their home, and they put it right back in the mail, and it comes right back. But you raise a good point, and I think that I'm sure that could have something to do with it, that people are also getting some books from their public libraries.
Representative Smith, did you have a question?
No, ma'am.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Put my physician hat on just for a minute. I have a lot of patients in my practice who have macular degeneration. That's the biggest cause probably of blindness now in the elderly. And never heard of this.
Okay,
never heard of it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm its primary care physician. You may, and you should, focus your efforts on ophthalmologists and retinologists because they're the ones that are going to see these people on a regular basis. Have you contacted that group of physicians pretty regularly?
Yes, we have.
How do you go about getting information from the ophthalmologist to the patient? I mean, obviously, leaving a brochure isn't good. They can't read it, okay? How's that contact actually made between the ophthalmologist and the recipient?
We provide ophthalmologists, I believe, with brochures and registration forms, and we go to their professional meetings, and we encourage them to sign people up for the service. So we do work with ophthalmologists, but we can do a lot more, Representative Bates. And like I say, part of it is that we've been a little hesitant to. If we saw a huge increase in registration, I think we'd be very hard pressed to deal with that.
Is it required by federal law that a physician fill out some paperwork on these patients?
Yes, they have to be certified by a physician as having the condition that qualifies them for the service.
we just love paperwork, okay? And we know these people that are blind are lying to us about getting these books. You know? So we have to really watch these people, not let the wrong people in the program, right? I mean, I'm a little sarcastic here, but I just hate this kind of stuff. Forms the physician have to come and fill out our... You can't believe it, you know? This is only one little piece. And I'm sorry that has to be done. It's a federal requirement, though.
And it really relates back to that copyright law. That's the problem, in that, you know, they're really getting a good deal. Publishers are very they would be very concerned if too many people were getting this service that eats into their revenue. Here's our performance measures. As you can see, we're hoping to increase registration in this biennium, increase circulation, maintain high customer service. We just did a survey for this program, a random sample of customers. 93% said very good or excellent service from Talking Book and Braille Services. And there you can see the donations, and we hope to see those increase in the next biennium.
Madam Chair?
Senator Mesley.
It's my same question. Why are you projecting in 2005 you'll have less people give a positive response?
Same answer. The board set that target in December, and the survey was completed in January. So we're not intending to reduce our customer service. We probably need to increase the target, Senator. We do compare our program to programs in other states. Every state has a Talking Book and Braille Library service, just like ours. And we actually compare to 7 states that are like Oregon in their demographics and the way they deliver the service. And when we do that, the latest data, unfortunately, is for 1999. But when we do that, what we find is we have the highest use of our service of any of these states. As you can see here, we check out an average of 46 books a year per patron. We're tied with Washington for the highest in that area. We have the most productive program. We check out more books per paid staff member than any of these states, as you can see there. And our costs per circulation are second only to Colorado.
How do you compute cost per circulation?
That's our total budget, or total expenditures divided by our total circulation.
It's easy.
Have you done any research to find out why Colorado can do it more cheaply?
Yes, Madam Chair. They own their own building, and they don't pay rent for that building. And they only have to pay utilities and maintenance. And I think that's a significant difference, that we pay a very substantial rent to the Department of Administrative Services on a building that was built and paid for in 1939.
That's that old assessment thing again.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, one of the reasons we're so productive, we have the highest productivity of any of these states, is that 36% of our workforce in Talking Book and Braille Services are volunteers. And these are community people, senior citizens, AARP, they're community service workers. We are assigned community service workers, which are offenders who are assigned community service, and they come to the state library and work for us. We have youth. We have kids from the School for the Blind in the summer. We have a tremendous volunteer program and volunteer effort, mm-hmm. and we rank in the top 10 in all public libraries in the state in the percentage of our workforce that is volunteer, and we're very proud of that. Program costs in the last 10 years, again, this is similar to what you've seen in our other programs. Through 2002, we're tracking just slightly ahead of inflation. There are no program reductions in the governor's recommended budget. The reason it says none that are not in the governor's recommended budget is that the 10% general fund reduction scenario, as I've explained to you, is all in ready to read. It's not in this program. And then program enhancements is Linda told you yesterday about Program Option Package 101, which partially funded to fund the rent for the TBAPS collection in the next biennium. Finally, Madam Chair, we're to library development, and this is our third service. You saw this slide yesterday. The Ready to Read grant program. In the latest year, we made 111 grants, totaling just over $700,000. That's at the dollar per child level that we were at the beginning of the biennium. We make grants once a year, so two grant cycles in a biennium. Here's some projects that actually are in your districts. I thought you'd like to see some of the projects in your own district and the grant amounts. And these are all excellent projects. These are projects that reach out to kids in child care centers and in Head Start centers and are taking books to kids that don't have books wherever we can find them, and story time programs. As I said, one of the outcomes of this program is an 80% increase in checkout and program attendance to children in the last 10 years. We're seeing three times as many children in library programs, reading programs, in the library and outside of the library than we saw 10 years ago. So this has been a great thing. This is our now we're into the Federal Library Services and Technology Act program. Most of the money goes to competitive grants. There's actually some money that funds staff in library development. There's some money that goes to two statewide programs, but the bulk of the money is just put out in competitive grants every year. And in this year, the board made 12 grants totaling over $900,000. I've given you, I think, nine of them here so you can kind of see what they're doing. There's a bookmobile in Crook County. There's some planning efforts. There's a very interesting project in Falls City. Falls City Library actually closed a few years ago. They had a city library, and they just couldn't support it anymore. And the school district stepped up and said, we can have a combined public and school library for Falls City, which is a small community. And they came to us, and we funded them actually for 3 years to get that off the ground so that Falls City has a library again, and they're collaborating with the school, and it really works well for them.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you supply a grant writer or information to local libraries to help them write federal grants?
Yes, Representative Bates. We use some federal dollars to have a half-time grant writing fund development fundraising consultant on our staff. That's one of the... I'll go back to the slide. That's the... you see the project coordinator part, point five, is a grant writing fund development specialist that works with libraries not just to apply the grant for grants from us, more importantly from the Meyer Trust and the Ford Family Foundation and the federal government and whatever grant sources are out there. And so that's been very useful to libraries.
Go ahead. I have a question here too, so... But go ahead.
What's been the success of writing those grants? Is that where the $900,000 came in from? Is from your grant writer working with your local people?
No, Representative Bates. Most of these people did these on their own. They didn't use our... Our consultant doesn't actually help people write grants that end up coming to us. They sort of point people in the right direction, and then it's really up to them. We would be of more assistance to help with a foundation grant or a grant to the federal government. We don't actually write the grants because it's just a half-time person for the whole state. It's more just sort of pointing people in the right direction and assisting them. They also help our fund development staff, and also helps libraries establish foundations, because many public libraries still don't have a foundation. And we think every library needs a foundation to raise money outside of tax money these days.
Well, have you considered expanding? I mean, grant writing is a real art and very difficult for small organizations to do. They've often never done it before. They haven't got an ongoing grant writer. It would seem a natural service for you to supply these people with a grant writer who would really point them in the right direction, give them the outline of the grant, and potentially bring in substantial money from the federal government and other agencies and foundations.
I think that's an excellent idea that we should consider for the future, as our federal dollars might increase and we would be able to do that. This activity is all funded with the LSTA dollars, Library Services and Technology Act. And if I could just add to that, our huge success last year was that we did write a grant to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and received $2.2 million, including, I looked it up, $175,000 for the Jackson County Library, 53 PCs, including an 11 PC lab that's going to end up.
And it should be noted that was in addition to this $35,945 that they received from the Ready to Read program.
And I would just point out again, rightfully so. Grant writing is such an art, and there's so much help needed at the local level to write those, and the money is available if we don't access it.
Really absolutely.
And it could be self-funding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could take some of that grant money you receive down, if you're careful, and help fund that position.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
My questions overall revolve around the staffing for Ready to Read. Going back up to that Library Development Services team slide, can you talk to us about where the staff is for the Ready to Read program?
It's one of those three librarians that you see there, Madam Chair.
So the funding to pay for the librarian's salary comes from federal funds?
No, Madam Chair, it's general funds.
It's general fund, okay.
The staffing here that you see in this slide is the principal exec manager D is general in the governor's budget, right? Or federal? Federal.
That's the one.
In the governor's budget, all these positions are federal funded, with the exception of the one librarian that works with Ready to Read.
Okay. Thank you. Please proceed.
In our plan for the next biennium, we want to continue to work hard to increase service to children. There's still a lot to be done. We need to train people in libraries, and we need to educate on the best things that are happening with the Ready to Read dollars, so that one project that's been very successful, we can share that and have it happen in other places. We are doing an internal evaluation of the Ready to Read grant program in this biennium, and the board will look at that and consider whether there might be changes that are needed. We've had that same program now for 10 years, and it's time to have a look and see if it could be made even more effective in the future. The board also wants to support initiatives developed by the Senate Interim Task Force on Library Cooperation. That's Senate Bill 12, which you heard about yesterday. We want to begin to analyze, evaluate, and disseminate data on school libraries. And we have the board has introduced a bill, Senate Bill 238, to do that. And there would be no fiscal impact, so that's why you probably won't see it in this committee, because we think we can do it within existing resources. But it's very important to do.
I would concur that, you know, looking at the small rural communities that I'm familiar with down in southwestern Oregon, the maintaining a school library and a public library is an interesting undertaking. And I think that there are a lot of small towns where you're talking about one significant school library, mm-hmm. and a branch of a public library system, and definitely potential for a lot more cooperation than there is right now.
Yes, Madam Chair. And then we want to support, there's a number of grassroots organizations that are working in in parts of Oregon to improve library service. We still have 13% of the population that either doesn't have a public library or has an inadequate public library, and the board wants to support these grassroots organizations. The biggest number of people without a public library, believe it or not, are in Lane County, and there's a group down there called the Lane Library League that's working very hard to change that, to give every child access to a library. Eugene just opened a beautiful new city library, but people living in Santa Clara, River Road, they have to pay $90 for their family to use it, and that's not a good situation. We're not blessed with county libraries in some counties as we have in Douglas County and Jackson County and other places in the state, and that's what these groups are working on.
Lane County doesn't have a county library system?
No, ma'am.
That's interesting.
It's really sad. About 90,000 people don't have a library unless they pay a big fee, and it really discriminates against poor people and children and elderly people.
How many counties don't have their own system?
Why not?
No, how many of them don't?
I think I know the answer, that 17 do. 17 out of 36 do
so
have.
So it's about half.
Marion County doesn't have a county library system.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't either. City libraries as well, huh?
Madam Chair.
Senator Masri.
That's really interesting to me. Do all city libraries charge very heavy fees out outside you?
Yes, Senator Mesley, that's pretty typical. I'd say the fees range here in Salem, the fee I think is $60. Eugene is $90. They're within that range, and you know, the answer, I mean, it wouldn't be right either to not have a fee, because if people aren't paying city taxes to support a city library, they shouldn't use it for free. The best solution that we pioneered here in Oregon 100 years ago is the county library. The Multnomah County Library was the third county library in the United States, 1902, that was established. So we know what the solution is. It's hard to get to because people have to change the way they've been doing things for a long time. The Douglas County Library and the Jackson County Library were formed, I think, in like the 50s. I know Ashland used to have its own city library, but it's a branch of the Jackson County Library. Yeah.
Strangely enough, this is how complex it gets. The Ashland City Library was partially funded and passed a measure to rebuild it, and then the county passed one about a year later, but superseded that. So there's a strange overlap, but for the same library, same building.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically a county system down there, which lets you have branches in all the small communities, and people have access through those communities, so sometimes there's some distances involved.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought everybody had a county library, because my county does. I just didn't realize that.
Yeah. Strange. Performance measures. The board wants to continue to increase service to children. That's very important to the board. We want to increase the interlibrary lending. We saw a 19% increase in that just in the last year. So libraries are really sharing their materials, and that saves money, because every library doesn't have to buy everything. They can buy different things and then just share them among themselves. We want to continue to make progress on our Oregon benchmark. In the last year, two libraries raised themselves up from below the minimum standard to above the minimum standard, and we get out and we help those libraries increase their hours, increase their staffing, and do what it takes to be at least minimally adequate. And we give grants to help with that. And then we want a new performance measure is the number of schools making improvements to achieve the quality education model standard for school libraries. The value is unknown because nobody's been collecting that data in the past.
How are you planning to go about working on that one?
Madam Chair, we've met several times with the Oregon Department of Education, and it turns out that they are collecting data on school library staffing and expenditures, and including expenditures for materials and books. And those are the two things that we want to track. We want to track the staffing and the amount that are being spent on books and materials in school libraries. And so they actually have that data. They just haven't done anything with it. So they're going to just send it over to us, and we'll analyze it and report it. And we think we can do that fairly easily and inexpensively. We'll set up a database program that'll just take the data and produce reports. So that's how we plan to do it at little or no cost in the next biennium. If the Department of Education was not collecting it already, we'd have a big problem, because then we'd have to survey the schools, which would be very difficult and costly. But they have the data. They just haven't done anything with it, and they're willing to have us take the data and produce some useful information with it.
But what are you, so besides collecting data, there's no actual program to impact the situation or anything like that?
Not at this time. The first step is to find out, you know, what the situation is. We know it's not good. We know we've lost a lot of school librarians in the past several years. We know that in Portland, for example, Multnomah County Library did a very detailed study of school libraries in Multnomah County and found that a number of schools have no book budget at all. The only money they get for new books for their libraries comes from Michael Powell, who does a fundraiser every November for the school libraries in Multnomah County. So we know the situation is bad, but we can't quantify it. And the quality education model, thankfully, says that a quality school has a librarian and has so much money per student that is to be spent on library books for the school. So that's good. We have that standard in the quality education model, but we can't compare that to the situation because we've never collected the data.
And we've never funded the model.
Yeah.
I think that all of our experiences with schools trying to, keep the classrooms funded as well as possible, that the library part of the program are one of those things, along with the music programs and the PE and all that, that are just going away.
That's true, Madam Chair. What people forget is that the school librarian is a teacher. The school librarian is a certified teacher who is also a librarian, and a lot of learning takes place in the school library.
Representative Bates.
Just a word of caution, Madam Chair. We're going to be looking at mandates we lay on schools to report things. And, you ask for this, and 50 other people ask for something else, and pretty soon you've got somebody at school not teaching kids, just filling out reports over an issue that basically, you know, the schools themselves should be able to make a decision of, we need a librarian and we need books and we need a library or computers and that nowadays. And then at the same time we require all the reporting, we tell them, by the way, we're not going to fund it, so just keep reporting how bad things are, but we're not going to fund it. And it's a little difficult for me to continually harass schools and districts for reporting requirements that take up funds that could be used potentially in the classroom. Or maybe that person who's doing all the reporting could be a librarian. Okay, and so I'm always a little cautious about these kind of things. They're well-intentioned, have a good idea in them, driving something where you want to go, but we just keep laying on more and more requirements for schools to report, and it takes up more and more personnel to do that. So I'm a little cautious about this kind of thing. They're already collecting the data. That's great. Mm-hmm. But somewhere along the line, somebody's collecting that data. Mm-hmm. And the Department of Education's got somebody tracking it. Each school district's got somebody tracking it. It's all administrative overhead for something that we're really not funding. Mm-hmm. And I often think if you just gave the money to the districts and said, you know, your professionals act like it, take care of this, you might be better off than mm-hmm. this kind of a tracking program. So that's just a word of caution.
Program costs in the last 10 years in this area, the top line is, I've given you a little more complex picture here. The top line is the total budget for this program. The next line down, the brown line, is our federal dollars. And you can see that the federal dollars increased nicely at the end of the 90s, but they've sort of flattened out in the last couple of biennia. And then the bottom line is the ready-to-read grant dollars. That program was funded at 50 cents per child per year in the first biennium you see here, 95-97. Then the next legislature increased that to 75 cents per child per year. And then in the next 99-01 biennium, it was increased to a dollar per child per year. And it was maintained there in the 2001-03 biennium, except what you see here reflects the after the fifth special session, it was actually reduced. And then in the governor's budget, it's about another 6% reduction. And the total reduction is 15% from the original close of session budget. We're down to we went from a dollar per child per year to 83 cents per child per year in the governor's budget. So our program reductions in this area are a 15% reduction to the ready-to-read grant program. And as you can see, there was also a deeper cut to ready-to-read in our 10% reduction plan, our 30% reduction plan, which I talked to the chair about before the meeting, makes deeper cuts in ready-to-read. It would actually take that down to 25 cents per child per year at the 30% general fund cut level. And then there's no program enhancements in the governor's budget for this program. And then this is my very last slide. I thought it would be helpful just to sort of have an overview of what's happened to ready-to-read funding in this biennium. As I just mentioned, it actually started out slightly over a dollar per child at the close of session. There was a reduction made in the second special session by the legislature. And then our House Bill 5100 plan for the state library made another reduction. About half of our 5100 reduction was to ready-to-read. Then the governor's recommended is there.
Yes, where did the other half of your 5100 cuts come?
We discontinued the Talking Book and Braille Services newsletter, and we cut out all travel in Talking Book and Braille Services, and that saved about $10,000. And then, as I think was mentioned yesterday, the board was looking for every possible way to save general funds in our budget, and they noticed that our volunteer coordinator was funded 100% with general funds, and that's actually different than everybody else in the administration office. The rest of us all have a mix of general funds and other funds from the assessment. And so the board's idea was if we put our volunteer coordinator on the same mix of general and other funds as everybody else, that would save some general fund dollars, and I think it was like $40,000 or something. So that's the way the board, they didn't want to take it all out of ready-to-read. They told us, you know, you really need to look everywhere to do it some other way. So that's what their intention was.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordon.
Thank you. What is the total reduction then, proposed reduction to ready-to-read?
In the governor's recommended budget, it's 15%, which is about $200,000. As you can see here, it goes from $1.4 million to about $1.2 million.
I'd like to take us back to slide 50, if I may. And point out a couple of things. The grants that you've currently awarded, I'm looking at the Malala Public Library Grant and also the Coos Bay Public Library Grant. What is striking about both of those for me is that they are targeted to underserved populations. And one of the concerns I have is that as we go forward and we look at where we might take these reductions, that we also be very mindful that we have some historically underserved populations in our state that never benefited from the boom times in the 90s, et cetera. And so any cuts that we may be looking at, it's possible that we will be taking cuts that fall disproportionately again on these same populations, these same communities. And again, looking at the Malala program, for example, it's improved Spanish language materials for children and parents. And Coos Bay, the Coos Bay effort is purchasing bilingual materials and providing multicultural programs for children. Mm-hmm. So again, it's just a caution, if I may borrow Representative Bates' earlier use of the word, and a concern that we be mindful of not making disproportionate cuts.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I want to go back to something just for a moment that you mentioned to the chair here a moment ago, that as you said, I processed it. I'm going to put a disclaimer here very clearly, especially if anybody in Medford who called me yesterday about beating up on you guys is listening today. Okay? One of my staffers called. You'd be mean to those people. This is education for us, okay? And it's nothing to do with you personally. I'm not interested in cutting your budget. One of the things you did to make your budget cut was to move somebody into another funds situation. What we need to learn and separate out is some of those other funds for your agency are still general funds. So you made that shift. Your budget was reduced by general fund money, but it didn't really change the overall budget because some of that was still general fund money. And that's something we're going to have to sort through in the bigger agencies as we go through this, just shifting people amongst funds. If the other funds are not truly other funds, they're general funds being shifted over, is important for us to be aware of. And I'm not criticizing what you did. I'll make it very clear, okay? I just want to make sure we all have a clear understanding of how those monies are being moved between agencies. And that's something that's hard for us to get a handle on. Does that make sense what I'm saying here? Okay, thanks.
Madam Chair, it might be useful to clarify. Maybe Cindy wants to. They did do some work on what percentage, an estimated percentage of their other funds is general fund, and...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on my overview that I had attached the information to, we looked at the 2003-05 personal services, and it was a total of approximately $6.3 billion. Of that, it represents roughly about 37% of general funds, of that $6.3.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I have two questions. As I look at the grants that you've got on the screen there right now, there's a wide variance in what kind of programs those cover. And I'm wondering if some of those programs are new enhancement programs or whether they're basic programs that you've had. There are different criteria for your granting. But probably the more important question, I think I've got the answer, but I want to hear it back from you that I'm hearing this properly, that as we adjust our budgets through this process, this session, that basically you're going to have to do almost all of your adjustments except for the one fund shift that Representative Bates just mentioned, but the rest, most of your adjustments are going to have to be done through the ready to read. And I guess I don't know that we have a lot of choices as I look at your options here. But I want to make sure that I'm hearing that correctly and that there's not other areas that you can reduce the general fund, and some of your other categories to take some of the burden off the ready-to-read program. Could you respond to that, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, your first question about what the libraries use the money for, the law says that they are to improve their service to children, and we take that very seriously. the purpose of this program is not to replace local dollars or to fund basic youth services. When the libraries have to send us an application and tell us what they're going to do with the money, and we look at that to make sure that they're actually doing something new to improve service to children. And those projects change over time. I mean, they're not the same. If you looked at this 10 years ago, the libraries are doing different things all the time, and we encourage that. So it's not just a giveaway. We really track what the libraries are doing and make sure that they're doing what really needs to be done to improve service to children. And then your second question, I would just need to reiterate that the board looked at every possibility in putting together the 10% and the 30% general fund reduction. And this was a specific deliberation of the State Library Board last year. They spent a lot of time looking at every possibility, and they just get back to the fact that we really only have two general fund programs anymore. That wasn't true a decade ago, but it's true today. As we've squeezed general fund out of our budget over time, we're down to Ready to Read and Talking Book and Braille Services. And it has to be one or the other to get any meaningful, you know, general fund reduction.
Thank you.
Okay. Linda, do you have anything to add to the discussions?
No, Madam Chair, no.
Okay. Any further comments or questions from the committee? Cindy, do you have anything that you need that we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
Madam Chair, the only thing we haven't covered were the personal services-based budget adjustment that Linda did, the handout that is also attached. It's not on the agenda, but it's in that along with that packet.
Thank you. Well, I believe this then does conclude our discussion on Senate Bill 5529.
Madam Chair, I did think of one thing you talked about yesterday, and that was the vacancies. I didn't have information, but you may want to still talk about that with the agency.
We should cover that point because it was brought up.
Well, I can do this from memory.
Okay.
Madam Chair, as of today, the State Library has 4 vacancies in our staff. One of them is a mailroom position in the Talking Book and Braille Services program, and maybe would help actually to go back to the organization chart in my presentation. Let's see. See if my little pointer thing works here. So the vacancies that we have today are one of these 3 mailroom positions in Talking Book and Braille Services. And it is currently being filled with a half-time temporary staff person. We really can't operate. As you saw in the other slide, we already use 36% volunteers to run this service every day. And so we actually brought in a half-time temp to help us with that vacancy. That was frozen, but we brought in that temporary help for Talking Books. And then the other three positions.
So just to reiterate then, the position in the mailroom was subject to the hiring freeze, but you got permission to bring in a half-time temp to cover the workload.
Yes, Madam Chair. The other two positions are in the government research and electronic services team. We have, as you can see here, we have six librarians that actually answer questions. They're reference librarians, and they work on the website, and they're the information providers. Then we have two librarians who work behind the scenes to select materials, catalog federal documents. They're technical services librarians. Two of these reference librarian positions are vacant, and they both were vacated at the end of last year. One gentleman took another job, and another librarian retired, and those were subject to the hiring freeze, and they're vacant today. And it's been very difficult because we've basically lost a third of our reference staff. So we're answering those 46 questions a day with only two-thirds of the people that we had.
So it slowed down your response time.
It slowed down the response and just made it really hard. And the service isn't as good, and our production has fallen off. I mean, that's just what you would expect.
And then in your 03-05 governor's budget, those positions are restored?
Yes, Madam Chair. And then there's the new position here that is the search engine Findor librarian. And then there's also one of these state library specialist two positions that became vacant, and that was subject to the freeze. And that position supervises our reference room and the people that work in there. So what we did to deal with that is we took one of these state library specialist one and put them on a rotation to fill the state library specialist two. So we just juggled people around and reset the priorities, and so that's how we're dealing with that vacancy at this time.
Questions?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess this somewhat gets back to my question a minute ago. On a temporary basis for maybe the next 2 years, could you leave any of those positions open then and save some funding?
Representative Morgan, Senator Meserle, starting with the talking book position, that would be extremely difficult. When over a third of our workers in that program are already volunteers, to lose any paid staff makes it very difficult to do the work. You know, the thing about volunteers is you can recruit them, but you can't, if they don't show up, there's not much you can do about it. And that's our struggle every day is, you know, will these volunteers that constitute more than a third of our workforce show up? And so to lose any more paid staff would just be extremely difficult. In this team here, you know, our librarian corps is down two. You know, we only have six to begin with, which we don't think is too many to serve all the state employees and all the agencies that we serve, and so that would be very difficult. And then the other position is important too. So I think it would be very hard to not have these positions in the next biennium.
So I would assume also that the library board has thought this through at length when they came to the decision that the ready-to-read program was where economy should be directed rather than these areas.
Yes, Madam Chair, and I would remind you that the only general fund position here, my pointer doesn't work, the only general fund position is the TBABS position, and it's the lowest funded position in our agency. It's really an entry level job that doesn't save a lot if it were to be eliminated.
Thank you. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, point out again, you say it's the only general funds positions are those? We're talking other funds again, which again is the assessments. So it's not.
Yes, absolutely.
Make it perfectly clear, okay? Yes. There's general, there's other funds and there's other funds. And I'm beginning to think we should separate those nomenclatures out so that other funds does mean, you know, grants from federal government, federal match money, and all the money you might raise through volunteer organizations, and not just for this agency, but for all, because it really confuses people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I agree, Representative Bates, that it's other funds are not always other funds.
Yeah. And then we're not even getting into the funny funds.
Further questions, comments, left out pieces, anything that to be brought up? Yeah, this is the catch-all phase of the hearing.
Madam Chair, just
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Just to clarify again, the grants in slide 50 are general funds. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Meserle.
I'd just like to say that I've learned a lot in your presentation, and it's been difficult for all of us, as we said, to work our way through this process. But, you know, for the amount of staff you have, you do a tremendous service to the state of Oregon. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
Before I do close the hearing, I would also like to thank you for bearing with us as we kind of inelegantly lumbered through this. And I can see in retrospect that we probably would have been very well served just to sit back and let you take us through your presentation. I appreciate your response to our questions, and I appreciate your additions to your the list of your priorities and where you're going to look to for economies, or where you're going to ask us to look to for economies. And just thank you very much for the grace and respect that you've shown us as we've gone through this. So if there are no more issues on Senate Bill 5529, we'll close the public hearing. There are just a couple of housekeeping issues. We have scheduled for tomorrow the Pharmacy Board and the Veterinary Board. Okay. We have scheduled for Thursday the Dietitians and the Nursing Home Administrators. I have been informed that binders for all of this are sitting over on the divider over there. Right. The binders have our individual names on them, so look for the one that has your name to take with you if you so choose. Otherwise, they'll be at your places. And, Cindy, do you have anything to add to get us ready?
No, that my presentation, Madam Chair, will be delivered today as well for all four.
Thank you very much.
To our offices?
Yes.
And appearing that there is no further business before this committee, we're adjourning. We'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Thank you.